Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, week 8 NFL recap show powered by betonline.ag. Hopefully, fellow sports fans, you've wiped the sleep out of your eyes, especially on the East Coast from a tremendous World Series Game 5. Football, a little bit of a different animal. But to get that take there, we will bring in my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider. What's going on this morning, buddy?
Early morning.
Early morning cranking this podcast out. That's for damn sure.
We have a great producer. We're allowing him to go on vacation. Yeah, we got to get this to him a little bit earlier today. So about what time did you wake up this morning? About 4:45?
Yeah, about 4:45 to try and get rolling. I mean, you mix in the World Series game that went on to the wee hours of the night, the fact that I didn't do my movie review Monday properly. I mean, let's just say we're working on about 90 minutes of sleep, so hopefully the content doesn't suffer as a result.
That's supposedly the nap window. That's good for your REM. It's either 20-minute naps or 90-minute naps.
Yeah, well, we'll see how I'm doing come later in the day if I'm running on fumes. But either way, the sleep cycle last night for me, Payne, was better than the way I assessed the NFL card for Week 8. Because sometimes in this business, you see things crystal clear. You kick yourself because you're leaving winners off the card. Yesterday, I was thankful I didn't bet more games on the board because I'm not sure I saw any of these games unfold exactly the way I drew them up coming into the weekend.
You track all the... everything we do, basically, and you're like, October is not a good month for us in general. It's not a good month. But yeah, yesterday wasn't a good day. Saturday was shockingly. Loved Saturday. Good
well,
day.
Well, a little bit of a grind out and missed extra point, of course, costing some of our Bet the Board listeners a little bit of profit at the window.
I forgot about that, yeah. Oh, which one? Oh, yes, Vandy. Jeesh.
Yeah.
This is my memory, by the way. I paint
this
picture.
It's apparently shot. Your memory's apparently shot at this point.
And I really want to – I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's just talk. It's just talk. Like, I know you were getting some crap for it. Oh, like this bet. When you are betting, like, how many ever games it is a week, how many ever games it is a month or a year, like one singular game literally means nothing. And most of the time, it's forgot after it's bet. Like, that's literally the situation that we're in as professional bettors, especially guys who are pummeling volume. Like, there are guys on a Saturday that are betting between second halves, first halves, full games, hundreds of bets. Could you imagine, like, getting emotional over, like, one loss? Like, that's not my thing. So I completely forgot about that. But I did watch the Vandy game. And I will say this. The first two touchdowns for South Carolina were penalty-aided, right? It was, like, third and five, and then it was incomplete. You get targeting, so automatic first down, touchdown. Then you get the punt. You touch the punter, automatic first down, 14. So there's a lot of things that went on. Vandy was the right side.
See, I was going to save that rant for Wednesday's college football podcast, but you get a little bit of it off your chest. But see, that's the whole thing. You have so many guys that approach this business in different manners, and I'm going to try and touch on it, maybe if not this week, next week, in a column on our Bet the Board website, about guys that go in, what you remember, what you don't remember, and how quickly you have to forget what you bet, but at the same time, remember what you saw, if that made sense. Factor all of it into the equation. Not be afraid to go back to the same sides, regardless of how bad or good they may look in a particular week. As always, though, on the Monday Bet the Board edition, we'll have some of our thoughts on what we saw this weekend. Of course, looking ahead to some of the Week 9 numbers that may be on the move, whether books have over-adjusted or under-adjusted. And of course, the Kansas City Denver Monday Night Football preview. But Payne, let's get into some of the most surprising things you saw from yesterday's slate of games.
Surprising. I was pleasantly impressed with Russell Wilson, and this is going to stun you. I really enjoyed that game yesterday. And I'm a defensive guy, right? I like.
Yeah, that's
like
a lot. That's a lot of offense for you to enjoy a football game.
It was awesome. I enjoyed it. As I was watching it, And then you look at the numbers, you're like, Russell Wilson was good. He was awesome. And then I got a chance to watch it in slow motion on the All-22. You take a deeper dive into the numbers, it was even better. And Wilson was ridiculous in the pocket. He was creating a ton of time to allow himself to throw it downfield. I was looking at this. He was pressured on 33% of dropbacks yesterday. He was literally like running around for his life. He completed 14 passes over 10 yards or more, 5 passes of 20 yards or more. So he was buying time for his offense. He was buying time for his receivers to get open. It was awesome to watch, and that was far and away the best performance of the day.
I mean, I know some of our listeners have been critical, and if we talk about Russell Wilson's performance, his counterpart in that game, are you starting to buy into Deshaun Watson a little bit more, or still skeptical of what he's done through his first 7 games?
Well, you're asking me the same. I saw that tweet come across, and I don't get it. Like, here's one thing, and I understand people are listening to this podcast on their way to work, thinking about the boss they hate, or on the way home from work, thinking about, you know, the jobs they have to do, or they're at the gym and they're on the treadmill and like there's a fantastic ass in front of them and like spandex, and they're not listening to the whole thing. So I'm going to preface this again. Like, there's context to this. Deshaun Watson is going to be fantastic, it would appear. Again, I'm going to say this. What he is today at the very moment, he's just scratching the surface. Visually, he's electric. Like, I've said all this before. You're rarely going to see quarterbacks in that game take shots and complete them over Earl Thomas's head. That said, right this second, he is still making too many turnover-worthy throws. And ultimately, that's why Houston lost yesterday. The pick six in the red zone, it's a 14-point swing. Thank God for your defense, because the pick out of the half inside your own 25 could have been a game changer. They held for 3. So he's still making these turnover-worthy throws. And the crazy part is when that tweet came across, it was like, Deshaun Watson's the man. It was a bubble screen that Hopkins turned into 80. I could have thrown that goddamn bubble screen. So, like, it's just so nuts.
And this I think a lot of people get attached to these players, and if their folks are Texans fans, you can understand, given what they've gone through at the quarterback position and all those first-round flameouts, it makes sense that they're excited about their quarterback. But you're exactly right. Just wait for him to reach his potential. It's going to take some time. You hope Bill O'Brien gets him on the right track. And clearly this team, if they had their players healthy defensively, would be a very difficult out as the season progresses in the AFC, which I guess leads me to a follow-up question, Payne. Right now, this day and time, who's the best team in the NFL?
Oh, it's not close. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And last night is the perfect example. And we talk about this all the time. When you can power through a bad spot and not only win, but outperform the market expectation in that horrific spot, I'm going to value that even more. And that's really when we start talking about power numbers, we're going to make our largest ratings adjustments. Outperform the market in bad spots, underperform against the market in great spots. Those are the two largest concerns, two largest causes of adjustments in our power numbers. And if you're not doing that way, I think you're doing it wrong.
What do you do with the Lions, who rack up the third most yards all time without scoring a touchdown? Obviously move the ball at will against the Steelers, but just continued to bog down, not only in the red zone, but felt like they ran 97 plays inside the 5-yard line without being able to punch it into pay dirt.
Well, let's think about this. This has been an ongoing issue for a few years now. They can't run the ball, right? So when you're getting inside the 20 and space starts to close. I know your quarterback's fantastic. He's probably got the best arm in football now that Aaron Rodgers is sidelined. And he's going to make tight throws, but you have to be able to run the ball. And if you can't, it's going to be unlevel production in the red zone. I don't want to toot my own horn because...
Stop. We know you love to toot your own horn around here. Stop.
We're not. And I'm looking at Detroit. So how many games have they lost in a row now?
I think 3 in a row.
Four or five or something like that. Three in a row. The problem is we're still not going to win our under 8 bet because Detroit is going to luck into a situation. We still have a chance, but they haven't played Green Bay yet. So now they get Green Bay twice without Aaron Rodgers. So you're looking at games where, I mean, they're going to be even, they would have been a dog at home, and then they clearly would have been a dog on the road. And now they're going to be a significant favorite at home, and they're probably going to be a little favorite. I mean, it's going to be close. It's going to be a pick 'em situation on the road now, depending on how bad Hundley is. So that's a massive disappointment to our win total that probably we would have won had Aaron Rodgers still been under center.
And you mentioned the Lions and their lack of a ground game. I think the stat they gave out on Sunday Night Football, and I don't have it written down in front of me, that in his entire career, for all the games Matt Stafford started, he's only had a 100-yard rusher behind him seven times.
That's awesome. So, that's a good stat. Yeah, then they came running. I know it was it was the they wanted to focus on this during the bye week, and they were talking about it, and like, well, and this is so funny to me. We have more success running over the right side. Well, that may be the case. But how long does that last, right? Okay, once they get it on film and you like to just run one way, that's not going to really work because defenses are going to game plan for that. So
it does make it significantly easier to scheme if you know exactly where a team is going with the football when they have it and they're electing to run. I will say not exactly a banner night from a Highland Park High School perspective when you have former teammates Clayton Kershaw and Matt Stafford both come away with losses. Obviously, the Dodgers, a little bit more costly as Kershaw was staked to a 4-run lead and a 3-run lead, but I digress.
We joked about that, right? I sent you the text. Like, is there no karma gods in baseball? Like,
oh, apparently not. When Yuli Gurriel is going out there, and he should have been suspended for the World Series for his racist gestures against Yu Darvish, and he's hitting home runs, where what I hear routinely from folks around baseball, that Kershaw is one of the best people in all of sports, and he can't get over the hump, can't get the win and secure it. Apparently, no, there are no karma gods in Major League Baseball. Maybe not in any sport, for that matter.
And I'm going to be an ass here. Is it a confidence thing?
You always talk about
the quarterback or the best pitcher. And man, this is going to sound so bad. Getting the hottest chick in the room.
I'm glad I'm sitting down because I think I know where you're going with this, but I'm not putting words in your mouth.
I'm going to say it. When you're the star quarterback, when you're the best pitcher in the world, and you can pick any girl in the world, and they're flocking over you, the hottest girl in the world, you know, scares me a little bit, his confidence. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it there.
I mean, you don't believe in high school sweethearts and true romance, Payne?
I do, but...
All right, before we get
she
too far
off the
rails...
She outkicked her coverage, let's put it that
way. I'm going to get you out of that uncomfortable position. If we're treating NFL teams like our stock portfolio, who are you buying right now and who are you selling?
And I just want to throw this out there because everyone gets upset, whether it's college or NFL, because I talk badly about their team or I talk badly about their favorite player. I'm shorting the Dolphins, my favorite team. And you know, we didn't do it at the peak of the market before Thursday's Ravens game, but I think there's still plenty of time to short it. They're 4-3. They could beat the Raiders, but past that, you're looking at this schedule. New England twice. Trips to Buffalo and Kansas City in the month of December. That's going to be a little chilly. The other games aren't cakewalks either. You're at Carolina against Denver. Miami's 4-3 right now, but they have the worst yards per play offense in the NFL, and it only got worse on Thursday night. And the defense in the secondary, I know they're playing bend but don't break. They're still giving up a lot of easy passes in that secondary. So I would short the Dolphins there. This is going to stun some people on the bye.
Uh-oh. Where are we going with this?
Mike Mularkey.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans.
No, they are. I would like to buy them. I think they're the defense scares me. Without those two guys.
Oh, there were some blown assignments in that secondary. If you can't sack a quarterback, I mean, there's some major issues the Texans are going to have to rectify if they're going to be a force in the AFC South moving forward.
Yep. I'm buying the other team in that division, Mike Mularkey, Titans. Mariota, still a positive net yards per play, and Mariota has been a statue of a QB. Off the bye, I think he's going to come out, and he's going to be ready to roll. They get 5 of 9 games at home. Baltimore and Cincinnati, two teams really overrated right now. You still have Arizona and San Francisco. You get the Colts without Luck. You get back-to-back home games to end the year. The schedule sits right for the Titans, and I think a lot of their metrics are distorted because you got Castle, who's inept, and you got Mariota that became one-dimensional, just had to sit in the pocket without his best attribute, and I think that's going to give him confidence, right? He was pretty good, especially that Monday night game. I know it was the Colts secondary. But he was throwing some great passes there, so hopefully his confidence goes up a little bit. Delanie Walker was dinged up. He's going to be healthy coming out of the bye. That's Mariota's one of his favorite targets. So Man, I cannot believe I'm going to bet on Mike Mularkey, but that's the stock I would be buying right now.
And here I was thinking that the team that you were going to say whose stock you were shorting was going to be in the AFCs, but I figured it was going to be the Buffalo Bills, who yet again get outgained by their opponent, 367 to 331, finish plus four in the turnover department against
plus
the Raiders,
yet
win comfortably by 20 points.
Plus four in the turnovers. And I just please, this isn't even me being a hater. Just please watch, go back, watch the All-22. I mean, the turnovers are getting ridiculous. They're not even like, so you get the fumble on the kickoff. I don't know what happens there, but then, you know, the Oakland guy tries to one-hand it, can't come up with it. The pick before the half, I don't care what it is, a pick or a fumble. It's just perfect adjustment somehow. The helmet shot, ball pops in the air. It's a pick six. The interception in the second half, it's a tip ball. It's as if right now the ball has a magnet in it and every single defender on the Bills has magnetic gloves. Like, it's just finding them. It doesn't matter where the tip ball is. It's ending up in Buffalo's hands.
And it's something to keep tabs on as we go forward. Obviously, those things have a way of regressing to the mean.
Not going
to
happen, apparently.
Well, you never know, or it'll happen all in one game where Buffalo will be like minus seven themselves in turnovers, and of course we won't be fading them in that particular spot. Two last questions as we kind of put a bow on things we've seen for week eight. Right now, NFL coach of the year in your opinion, and NFL MVP.
Bills fans aren't like me here. Sean McDermott. And again, the ball is just finding them defensively. But they're not going to – so the differential, I think, is always going to be decent for the Bills, how they play offense, how they use Tyrod Taylor. Like, he's not chucking it all over the park. And they like to establish the ground game. So, you know, it's not going to lead to a ton of turnovers for them. It's the turnovers they're getting is what we're kind of focusing on right now. But you get Sean McDermott, comes in, guys are learning a new system, guys are learning new schemes, new blocking schemes, new techniques. He has no issues – getting rid of guys, but he's not an asshole. So there's like a difference, right? You can rule with an iron fist, but you can also be a player's coach. And that's what he is so far. He's willing these guys and saying, hey, this is a next man up approach. It doesn't matter. They had two guys out in the secondary. Both the replacements filled in admirably. Right now, this is a team that's winning. And you know what? We talked about this on the preview podcast, that they weren't really fond of Marcell Dareus. No problem. We're winning. We're a game out of first place in the division. We're still going to ship you out of here because it's next man up.
See you, buddy. You're heading to Northern Florida.
Yep. And that's not to go off on a tangent. That's a big pickup for Jacksonville. Their defense is number one in overall efficiency, but they can't stop the run. That's a good get if they can get his head on straight. But Buffalo, again, I've talked about this. They play so hard. He's getting them to play so hard. So coach of the year at this point, Sean McDermott, for a team that their over-under was six wins. They have five already. Huge. Definitely NFL MVP?
Yep, NFL MVP.
Is that the other one? Alex Smith.
Alex, because something I never thought I'd hear come out of your mouth before the season. Especially knowing that we're both holding, along with a lot of our listeners, Kansas City Chiefs win total tickets under 9.5.
Yeah, that thing's fried, I would think. I mean, you know, listen, I didn't see this coming from Alex Smith. Nobody did. And that's why I'm making the MVP. Like, passer rating 20 points higher right now than his single best season. He and Andy Reid got together, heard what people were saying about his ability to throw deep. Last year, 9% of his passes were of the deep variety. Only Sam Bradford threw less deep throws. And so you look at this year, he's kind of middle of the pack, like, you know, 14th most deep passes in the NFL. But what he's doing when they're throwing them, number one in passer rating in deep passes, number one in adjusted completion percentage on the deep throws. And it, for me, it's a total remake, total adjustment. Everyone in life, like, hates change, really, right? And now all of a sudden, you're getting a guy who is the number one overall draft pick. You're getting a guy who's been a starter in the NFL, and he's 33 years old, and he's willing to make change. So that's the biggest thing, and the change has been fantastic.
It's always funny when somebody's breathing down your neck and you need to try and hold on to that piece of real estate right in front of your face. So
it could change about 15 hours from now, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And we'll get to, of course, the Chiefs-Broncos Monday Night Football game later in the podcast. And as it is every week, the big game breakdown comes to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition and the American Gaming Association. But on to some of the look-ahead numbers, Payne. Thursday night, we've seen the market shift with the aforementioned Buffalo Bills. Although when we jumped on the podcast, the Bills were 3.5-point road favorites at the Jets. That number has now moved to Buffalo -3, -$1.20. But the look ahead number here had Buffalo poised to be under a field goal favorite for the trip to MetLife at only a modest 2.5.
So under a field goal, then over a field goal. That's a key number. So we've
and
seen
now right at a field goal.
Yeah, now right at a field goal. Appears from a betting standpoint that that would be the right side. But again, I don't love the Jets right now. They're playing decently, but this is one team that I'm not really sure what the market thinks of them.
The Jets or the Bills, you're saying?
The Jets. Clearly they've overachieved, right? But their stock was so low coming into the season, and everyone's getting sharper, right? When you're looking at the Jets and you start to make a case for them, you know, look at the three wins. It was the Browns, who haven't, how many games in a row have they lost? It's like 24 straight games.
No, they have one win last year. They beat our beloved Chargers, but it's a lot.
They're 1-24, I believe. Something along those lines.
Yeah, something terrible. Something close to that.
And then you get Miami, who was dealing with Hurricane Irma, who was on the West Coast for 10 days, traveled back across, actually had to go back home to deal with Hurricane Irma, then back to New York, had their bags packed for London. You get the Jaguars on the return trip from London. I know it's the NFL, and you just got to beat teams. It's tough to win games. But every single – it's a Browns win and two of the most horrific – or for them, two of the best spots that you could possibly have this season. So that – so for me, I'm having a tough time gauging the Jets. I think last – if not for the weather, the Falcons absolutely killed them yesterday. So that's what scares me here if I were to be getting involved on the Jets. But it's clearly going to be the spot.
And you saw very real professional money. That number dipped as low as 3.5 during the week, and Atlanta ballooned out to 6.5. Of course, that game gets middled for the sports books and probably was the encapsulation of the way things went for the house. We'll get Dave Mason's take on Thursday. Interested to hear what he has to say, Payne, because I can't imagine books were thrilled with a lot of the results, especially in the big games. As players were carved up early, they're appearing to get a little bit of their revenge at the midway point.
It looks that way, and yesterday was a bloodbath. Got all the big games, the standalone Vikings game, favorite and over. Carolina, I know we spoke to Dave Mason a little bit, said Carolina was going to be big for them. Carolina won. The two late games didn't work out very well. Public got their way. Did the pick six send it over the total as well there for the Cowboys? So
it sure did.
Yeah. Ooh. So, man, that's tough, right? When you go out and get the best number, because under 50.5 was extremely sharp. Closed, what, 45.5, 46? I know the weather in the first half wasn't as strong as initially anticipated, so we saw people watching pregame, and it ticked up a little bit, but that's a tough way to lose a great number. And then you got the Sunday night football game. That one thankfully stayed under. That might be some saving grace for them.
Yeah, but bailed out the books a bit, yeah. But that game out for me was surprisingly split with the Steelers and Lions. Of course, as you got closer to kickoff, though, any chasers that were out that were looking to lay the points with the road
favorites. But it's public and professional there. And that's one thing we talked about on that podcast. Once it got to 2.5, I said, this is the largest yards per play discrepancy the entire week. Math guys are going to gravitate towards Pittsburgh, and they sure did.
They did. I mean, I saw it get as high as 3-1/4. Never saw 3.5 tick up. But clearly you had some difference of opinions taking place there. I know a lot of folks that asked me, I said, hey, you know, you have professionals trying to take advantage of the math angles that are out there for the Steelers-Lions game and, of course, the situational edge working in Detroit's favor. This game for me, Payne, on a look-ahead number, relatively fascinating because neither team played this weekend. We've still seen the market adjust. The look-ahead number from the Westgate Superbook had the Rams listed as a 3-point road favorite for their trip to MetLife, laying $1.20. Current line at betonline.ag has the Rams listed as 3.5-point favorites.
I think 3.5 is probably the right number just from a perception standpoint. You know, the Giants got the perfect storm there Sunday night against Denver. That's not a style that you're going to be able to employ too often and win games. We saw it didn't work against Seattle. I think a lot, well, let's monitor injuries there. They should have some guys back for the Giants, so that should help a little bit. But you get a Rams team that's still living on some perception. It's L.A. They're ahead of schedule. I think that's why we've seen this tick up a little bit.
Jaguars-Bengals look-ahead number for this matchup had the Jags a 3-point favorite at Westgate Superbook, lay $1.20. Current line now, though, at betonline.ag, you're seeing this number trend closer to 4.5. It's 4-$1.13. But what surprised both of us was how short BetOnline actually opened the Jags for this one.
Yeah, two. Ooh. That was short. You know, listen, the Bengals aren't good. And
what do you mean getting outgained by the Colts and needing a pick six to win that game as a double digit favorite isn't a ringing endorsement for where Cincinnati is right now?
Well, I think it makes the case that I might even be a larger idiot for looking at the Bengals the week prior against Pittsburgh. That looks really stupid right now. And I wasn't a believer in the Bengals. That was more, hey, the information here is really strong. And there we went. And it was, the Bengals are not a good football team. It's a poorly coached team. Not a lot of talent there. The offensive line only allows you to do so much. It's a bad offensive line. Andy Dalton has not been good under pressure. It's a bad football team. Oh, got so Adam Jones going out there, too. He's playing with the
broken back. Yeah, the Travers process in his back.
He doesn't look 100%. And if he's not out there, the cornerback situation isn't great either. Defense is a little overrated, too. It's a bad football team.
Where do you think this number sees a little bit of resistance as it trends towards 4.5, or do you think it just basically settles there for the duration of the week?
It's a good question.
We'll keep tabs, and it may not be a game that we revisit on the Thursday podcast, but either way, the Jacksonville Jaguars continue to get more and more interesting, especially with their recent acquisition of Marcell Dareus to bolster their run defense,
yep.
Like Payne mentioned earlier. On the surface, Payne, this looks like a big line move, but obviously we know it's not around key numbers, so it doesn't change the handicap a ton. Look-ahead number had the Texans a 10.5-point favorite playing host to the Indianapolis Colts. The current price right now has the Texans a 13-point favorite at betonline.ag for that game against Indy.
I don't know where we would like to go, but
I mean, I may as well ask you. We talked a little bit about the Texans, the Colts, and what you think the Colts are moving forward.
They're the worst team in football right now by our power numbers. I think we had them even. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I think maybe a 0.5 point better than Cleveland, if I remember correctly. So I mean, they're a bad football team, and I'm not bumping them up for last week's performance. I just can't. They had three injuries on the defensive side of the ball as well. Going to have to monitor those. And that's what makes the Bengals performance offensively yesterday even more head scratching with three defenders, three starters out for the Colts. So going to have to monitor those injuries. I know it's a division game. And again, if there's turnovers, makes it a little tougher to cover a number like this, but I won't be on the Colts. I can't think
there's any chance that we see Colts fixture Frank Gore move before the Tuesday trade deadline so Marlon Mack can officially take over as their number one running back?
With Turbin down, I mean, you need two backs in this day and age.
You just figure the workload ends up shifting towards the young kid?
Well, that's what we thought. Yeah, this past week, a lot of the sharpest guys in the world played Frank Gore under 44.5 rushing yards. Got as low as like 38.5 I saw in the prop market just because it was trending more Marlon Mack. Unfortunately, when you had a game 10.5, 11, you thought the style would indicate Indianapolis playing from behind, so less touches for Gore, more Marlon Mack catching it out of the backfield. Once that game got close and it was tight the entire way, Gore got some carries. That's why that eventually lost, but yeah. I don't know if they can move him. I think he deserves to be moved. Find a team that wants to win. And yeah, he's quietly one of the most underrated players in NFL history. Just passed, I believe, Tony Dorsett. Now I think 6th all-time on the rushing list. He is going to probably be a first ballot Hall of Famer, as crazy as that's going to sound to some. Now, everyone just overlooks Frank Gore. He's going to find his way towards the top of that rushing list.
There's a lot to be said in this league, and we talk about it all the time. You can be great in flashes, but if you're not on the football field, you don't do your team any good. Frank Gore is that model of durability. He doesn't wow you with his performances or those highlight reel runs, but you look at his stats, it's a cumulative effect. It almost reminds me from a statistical side of like a Curtis Martin. You know, continues to get out there just year after year after year, puts up results and puts up numbers.
Always moving forward. That's the biggest thing. You're rarely stopping him in the backfield. He's always moving forward. He's always picking up that extra yard or two. Obviously, as you alluded to, doesn't have that burst, so the highlight reel runs aren't there, but it's just an accumulation of yards over time. He's still durable. I think he's still pretty effective, especially if he can get behind a good offensive line. He can still grind out some games, still change tempo, still, you know, be a factor that teams want to run the ball when they have a lead and shorten the clock. So I think he can help another team out.
And last but not least, a number that's moved a little bit, trending towards a key number, the Raiders on Sunday Night Football head down to your neck of the woods. On the look-ahead number, Oakland was a one-point favorite. The number right now at betonline.ag, Oakland -2.5, lay $1.20, dare I ask, if we see a 3 for the Raiders playing their second game on the East Coast in as many weeks.
Probably not a lot of people watched the Raiders game. Everyone saw the Dolphins game. And it looks like you're going to have Cutler out there, and he's going to be playing with some cracked ribs. Devontae Parker status, I would think.
Dainty Devontae finally going to be out there?
I would think he's got to go. He started practicing a little bit early last week. He was questionable for the Ravens game, but did get a couple practices in. This is effectively the Dolphins' bye, since they won't have one this year. He should be out there. And it's a huge game for both teams. Again, we're talking about it. This is the Raiders' season. And for the Dolphins, things can turn pretty quickly if you go back to 500. You got to get a win here and go to 5-3. I probably won't have anything in this game.
Gotcha. Well, hopefully you're in attendance for this one. We want to see Payne Insider out there sporting Bet the Board gear running around between TV timeouts.
It is the Sunday night variety. Usually those are the only games I can go to, like that standalone Sunday night or the standalone Thursday. You won't find me out there at a game that's regularly scheduled.
No, that is that is for sure. When you talk about regularly scheduled, what is tradition around these parts, the Monday movie review? And Payne, I think for maybe, I don't want to say the first time all season because we've seen a couple. I'll put what Only the Brave up there as the best movie we've seen so far in the 2017 football season.
Okay. I won't disagree with you. I still like Wind River. I think that's still up there, maybe a slight tick better, but this was good. I would definitely go and see it. We aren't going to talk about it too much because if you talk about this movie too much, you're going to know the ending. And you're going to
Google it. It's a true story. But
who does that? Can I ask that question? Do people actually? I really try not to watch previews before I'm going into a movie. I don't really want to read anything about it before I go into a movie. I don't really want to be influenced by anyone else's opinion.
I thought you were just
going
to say you don't really want to read, and then I was going to, that sounds about right.
No, I don't want to read anyone else's opinion about it before the movie. Like, I want to kind of go in, form my own opinion, see if I like it or not. So I didn't read a bunch about this. Now, after seeing it, and we're not going to be calling it Smoke Jumpers anymore. Let's just put it that way. That was bad of us. I would definitely see it. It's definitely worthy of a few hours, especially this busy time of year.
Yeah, I think Josh Brolin does a tremendous job kind of playing the main character. He was awesome. So from an acting standpoint, storyline can be challenging. So I would encourage folks who are in the right state of mind. But definitely a worthwhile watch, to say the least, if you're looking to try and kill a couple hours.
I think he's one of my favorite actors.
He's done a hell of a job. He's definitely climbing my power ratings as far as actors are concerned.
Loved him in the remake or the newest Wall Street. He was good in American Gangster, which is one of the most underrated mob movies of all time. Fantastic soundtrack, by the way, if you're into like jazz and that kind of stuff. Yeah, he's been in a lot of good stuff. I like him.
He's definitely climbed the list. When we look towards this week, I mean, are we going on a Miles Teller kick? Are we going back to the well with Thank You for Your Service?
Sure.
I wasn't sure what else is out there, so I pull up my lovely movie apps and see exactly what may be available across this fine country.
We're not going to get you to see the Jackie Chan movie, are we?
I mean, if you really want to push for Foreigner, you can push for Foreigner.
Let's go on the Miles Teller kick. Okay. And then maybe we'll... The problem is the Foreigner is going to be leaving the movie here pretty soon, I would think. So it's going to be tough to...
Yeah, it might hang around for a little while longer.
Yeah, it is getting great reviews.
I mean, I did debate trying to push you to go see Jigsaw, like the 15th movie in the Saw family, but I figured that wasn't worth it.
I'm actually a big fan of those movies.
Really? You hate horror movies.
It's a little different, though. Not really like a horror movie.
True. It's a good point. It's more psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Than a horror movie. I will say one thing, and I know you don't read a lot of reviews. The Matt Damon Suburbicon, probably some of the worst reviews I've seen for a movie in a long time.
It looked funky.
That had a lot of money pumped into it as far as publicity is concerned.
It looked a little funky.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes giving it a 26. So as we get closer to the holidays, hopefully some
better
options.
I'm not a Rotten Tomatoes guy. I'm an IMDb guy. I'm a man of the people. I want to hear what thousands and hundreds of thousands of people say about a movie.
I almost was ready to denounce both of them given the ratings that they gave Blade Runner 2049.
That's true.
So either way, so all right, thank you for your service will be the movie choice. If you guys want to go check that out on your own, do so. You can kind of follow along. And as always, if you have suggestions, tweet them to us at BetTheBoardPod. We always love to hear what our listeners have to say and what they recommend on the silver screen. Before we close up shop, Payne, we do have a football game this evening in the AFC West as Kansas City tries to put a stranglehold over the division with both the Chargers and Raiders going down. And as is always the case around here, your big game breakdown courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition that aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver information regarding the American Gaming Association's ongoing efforts to legalize sports betting at a casino near you. We look at this number, Payne. You have seen some line movement. Kansas City, a 7-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game sits at 42. It's the Jamal Charles Revenge Tour at Arrowhead Stadium tonight.
Where would you like to start? Let's start with this. Let's get the good stuff out of the way. And then we can kind of break this down. So, professional money has obviously already gobbled the hooks on the side. And on the key number of 44, taking it down from 44.5 to as low as 42. We know 44 and 43, two of the largest key numbers present day NFL. So those are big. I know a lot of people say, oh, just 2 points, much more value than that. And again, professional money is on Denver. 70% of the tickets on KC, still not mattering. Man, it'll be interesting to see if this trends below a touchdown.
I mean, you saw something similar yesterday, and it wasn't quite as pronounced, obviously not the same level of volume. The Patriots game, very real money from 7.5 all the way to 6.5, and the Chargers just couldn't get over the hump.
No. So I initially had this spot circled, and this is what I like to do with every single game. I really people get influenced by things, and stats are great, trends, you know, whatever. But mentally, your opinion is going to kind of come out in these things, or you're going to pick which ones agree with your opinion. So I always try to stay away from that. I always try to do a sufficient job being as unbiased as possible, looking at both sides of the coin. So again, I will say initially, I like Denver here, +7.5. Then I started to dig in a little bit. This is effectively the Chiefs, right, off a bye week. They haven't played since, what was it, the 19th? Was that Thursday night game against Oakland?
Yeah, Thursday night against Oakland, a game they lost, obviously, on the final play of regulation.
So this is a handicap as if Reed has extra prep time, and we know what those numbers look like. He is going to have a fantastic script early, especially, you know, off back-to-back losses. And then I am not going to, I decided, just looking at those games, I am not going to move Kansas City down in my power numbers with those back-to-back losses. Pittsburgh just has their number. It's a great matchup for the Steelers. It was Oakland Super Bowl. In addition to, you know, KC having to travel across two time zones on a short week, I don't think you should be making much of an overall here. I just don't. There should be zero adjustments in the KC power number off those back-to-back losses. And I think that's what's going to determine what side of the fence you are on for tonight. And, you know, to kind of break this down, if you're not dropping KC in your power ratings off those back-to-back losses, you're going to land on KC here. And, you know, no matter what point you're trying to gauge these teams, you're going to have to parse things out. I know it's short sample size. It's the NFL. That's something you have to deal with. But teams in week one aren't what they are in week five. They're not going to be what they are in week five. The same as what, you know, in week 13. So
you mean we shouldn't be looking, you mean basically we shouldn't be looking at the Denver Broncos offensively as the same team that scored 40 plus on the Dallas Cowboys?
That in this whole thing, right? You know, if you're parsing out your metrics, and I speak to a lot of the sharpest guys, and you know, no one has the same opinion. That's why I like talking to sharp people that aren't in the same gatherings, because you know, you get a lot of influence there. If everyone's kind of in the same circle, they're going to think the same things.
It becomes the echo chamber that we see on social media. It's the same opinion that gets circulated over and over again, and people pawning it off as original when it's really not the case.
So, right. And I say that to say this. If you're parsing out metrics, and it's like the last 4 weeks of Denver, and you're excluding weeks one and two for Denver, and you're using that current sample size of a month, you're again going to land on KC in this spot tonight. And that's what's troubling to me. So this is an important early season trend, and it makes a lot of sense to me. So since 1990, the Denver Broncos are 28-3 at home weeks one and two. That number is even better since 2000, where Denver is 18-1 at home weeks one and two. And so that tells me a couple things. Their opponents are having trouble adjusting to elevation, altitude. They're not in shape. And in current day 2017, where these off-season programs due to the new CBA are shortened, you can't do as much, less contact, less conditioning. Teams aren't in ideal shape. So you look, Denver barely was able to hold on week one against the Chargers, who were getting acclimated to a new system with Anthony Lynn. Dallas had a slew of injuries and suspensions on defense. They were starting a ton of young guys. And this is one thing, and I just remembered this morning. You remember back in August, there was an offensive lineman. His name was Joe Looney. He was making fun of Zeke Elliott. He dressed in like the Zeke Elliott uniform. You remember that?
I do not remember that story.
He shows up to like practice, and this is a big lineman, mind you, with like the cutoff shirt and the pants. And I was like, you know what? It's hilarious. I thought he was just making fun of him. Early on in the season, Zeke was 20 pounds overweight. And then he was in week two traveling to elevation and altitude, and he has more carries than yards. And we know if Dallas can't run the ball, they're not going to be a good football team. And so that was really what got Denver going. And so, again, perfect situations early on in the season with facing new coaches, new regimes, new schemes, a team dealing with injury, suspensions, a bunch of young guys, their best player out of shape, going into altitude. So if you're backing those losses out or those wins out and parsing to like current day Denver over the last 3-4 weeks, again, you're going to find yourself on KC here. And this is why I'm not going to be on this game all of a sudden. Initially loved the Broncos +7.5 to begin the week. That is the professional side. I am not going to be on it, though.
Well, we've done a good job, in my opinion, of avoiding some of these landmines, and a lot of people jokingly or somewhat serious, we can't bet the underdog or under, so you guys haven't dabbled. I feel like an inordinate amount of these Monday Night Football games are coming down to a lot of luck late in games, and we try and remove that from the equation. We'd love to be able to give out a side or total on every standalone game if the opportunity presented itself. It hasn't quite been the case so far in 2017. So nothing on the side. Anything on the total intrigue you as this number moves from 43 to 42?
And I think that's a little overplayed, right? I saw those come across. Ooh.
It's a two-minute warning. Two-minute warning.
That is a two-minute warning for our producer, by the way. I saw that come across and saying, like, it seems like, you know, overs and favorites. And they are coming in, but the combination of over and favorite, I believe, is only 1-4 of 8 games. And when you start to look at them, it was like Kansas City, the luck box touchdown there that sent it over. And then the luck box Travis Henry touchdown. So it would have actually only been 2 of 8 games. That combination on Monday night came in. When you look at the total, the under makes a lot of sense because of how... Right, there's correlations to these games. So if you're betting Denver, it's got to be under because of their defense, which is still fantastic right now. 4th in efficiency against the 6th best slate of opposing offenses. So the defense is still very good, especially with Vance Joseph. And then you figure how they have to tactically approach this game. And again, it's got to be via the run. I know it's 2017 and I'm all about the pass, but tonight's got to be a 40-run night. It's got to be. It's got to be C.J. Anderson. It's got to be Jamaal Charles. And right now, over 50% of running plays are grading successful against this Chiefs defense. And those numbers get even worse when you attack KC on the edges. 64% of runs grading successful to the left edge, 60% to the right edge. It's why we think Jamaal Charles sees a little uptick in carries tonight, because we know he can still get outside a little bit. It's that zone scheme. You can get him on the edge. That's the way Denver's going to win this game. So again, it's going to be a correlation. It's either feast or famine for professional bettors tonight.
Wink, wink, nod, nod. If you can find a prop number on Jamaal Charles' total yardage, that may be the best way to get you to the window. Not seeing anything out there now, not knowing numbers, it won't be an official investment. But if you're looking to dabble, I won't want to put words in your mouth, Payne, but I think that might be the most intriguing way to try and get your beak wet in this spot.
If there's, I mean, I kid you not, they got to run the ball 35, 40 times tonight. So, I mean, C.J. Anderson, even if he gets 20, 25, and that's the key again for this game. Denver's 3-3 right now. C.J. Anderson more than 20 carries, 3-0. C.J. Anderson less than 20 carries, 0-3. You got to run the ball and take it out of Simeon's hands.
And for that to happen, I think Denver's got to come out with a good game plan defensively and not get down two scores where they have to abandon the ground game. So we'll keep tabs on the Chiefs and Broncos. I think we're about to learn a lot more about both of these clubs going forward. But as far as Bet the Board is concerned, we'll be sitting this one on the sidelines looking to identify some ample opportunity both in the college ranks for our Wednesday podcast and, of course, when we reconvene on Thursday. Any parting shots, Payne, before these fine folks are without us for at least 48 hours or so?
No. Producer texting me now. Get this off.
All right. On that note, we will ship it off to the powers that make us sound a little better than we often do. And for all you folks that will dabble in the Monday Night Football game between the Broncos and Chiefs, we wish you nothing but the best. Hopefully, we'll see you at the window.